Pleasure to be here for me this morning, talking for the first time in our new home. And I really do want to acknowledge and bow to everybody in this community who has made this possible through their efforts and their enthusiasm, their love for the Dharma, and also financial contributions. This morning, I'm going to talk about Dana. And for those of you who have heard me talk anywhere from one to three or four times on Dana, two bits of good news. Different talk. And I'm going to keep it short to leave some time at the end so that we can share our collective wisdom, which is certainly a whole lot greater than what I possess. First, I'd like to say what Dana is not. Dana is not money. And I think most of us at some point along the way have made a connection, because actually a lot of newsletters will say there will be an opportunity to give Dana at the end of the retreat, which, you know, pretty specifically implies money. That is not what Dana is, in my opinion. The other thing I want to say about Dana is that it's very tricky for many of the teachers, not as much as used to be true 10 or 15 years ago, to talk about Dana, to give a Dana rap, because essentially that talk encourages you to be generous. And then who's ever in the teacher's seat gets the benefit of the generosity. So there's a little conflict of interest, in a sense, in that. And I know when I was a beginning student, it used to drive me crazy. But I do have a little tendency towards skepticism and paranoia, and I would be doing a number about that. Because my circumstances are such, and because I have had pretty good money karma, it turns out I do not need the Dana that would be donated today. And I don't want to close the door on allowing you to express your Dana in the form of money if you choose to. So two things. One, all of the Dana that's donated to the teachers today will be turned over to the Mid-Peninsula Center here. And I will personally match up to $1,000 whatever is in the basket. That gives you the opportunity to express your generosity if you choose to. And it puts me in the dandy position of my being able to express my appreciation in that form also. I particularly like talking about Dana because of all the aspects of the teaching that I've been exposed to and all the practice I've done. That spirit of generosity has been, it's something that I've really think I've absorbed almost at the cellular level. I really feel it. It's not a head trip. Sometimes if I talk about the Four Noble Truths or the Five Hindrances or the Eightfold Path or it becomes very intellectual for me and not from a heart space, because I haven't experienced some of those things as deeply. So what is Dana and what is not Dana? The first thing is that money is not Dana. Money may be a form in which we express Dana, But money itself is not dana. Community service, again, is not dana. It may very well be, and it usually is, I think, a manifestation of the spirit of dana. Dana for me is that open heart space that feels compassion for other beings or a situation, whatever's happening, and there's compassion and caring and the desire to do something about it. So it is really about a state of being, and then there are the questions of how we manifest that. But it's the state of being that's the dana, and the other is simply implementation, the form of expressing the spirit in our heart. One of the things that I like to emphasize is that I would imagine most of us in here feel that open, compassionate, caring place of wanting to help, wanting to do what we can to alleviate a situation 5, 10, 20 times a day. It happens often. At least it does to me. And I really want to encourage people to pay attention to that impulse when it occurs. Really drop back and feel it in your body. It's a very wonderful feeling. I mean, it's fabulous to experience yourself there with your heart open and wanting to help and caring. I mean, for me, that's really the greatest joy of my practice. Then there's a second step, which for lack of a better phrase, I'll call discerning wisdom. There are so many opportunities, so many needs to be served, that there's no one in this room. I don't think there's anybody on the planet who could possibly respond to everything that calls to their heart. I mean, whether it's all the people suffering in Afghanistan or the refugees in Rwanda or the families of the firefighters in New York, the homeless people in Palo Alto, there's organizations like the Ecumenical Hunger Project and the Urban Ministry. I mean, there are just an unlimited number of them, and we can't support them all with either our money or our time. I mean, it's just not possible. So we need to pay some attention as to how we respond and with how much of our resources. My experience in the Buddhist community is that there are a fair number of people who would basically give away the house because they are so moved by compassion. The fact is that we live in a complex culture, and if we don't take care of plans for our old age and for our kids' education and for paying the automobile insurance and the mortgage, we're just going to turn out to be a burden to somebody else. So there is the balance between this wonderful impulse of the heart that just wants to help and then using some common sense or discerning wisdom and saying, oh, I'd really like to give some money or time to this, and I'm just not able to do it. And if you play with this as a practice, be very careful that some judgments don't start creeping in about, oh, you could have done more, or any of these kinds of thoughts that may follow on it and say, oh, you're not really generous at all. Those are mind trips, notice thinking. and come back to feeling the generous impulse in your heart. There are, I think, really, as I see it, primarily two ways that dana is most frequently expressed or manifested in this country, in our communities here. The first is service, and I know lots of you in here are, well, lots of people put in an enormous amount of time and energy so that this building could manifest for us. But there are people involved in all kinds of different public programs, whether it's helping out in the library or, again, the Ecumenical Hunger Project or the Urban Ministry or doing death and grief counseling or, I mean, again, a limited number of opportunities. It's interesting for me, as I am about as close to retirement as I can get, and hopefully it will be finalized in April, as I look back and think of what are the best, what are the choicest morsels that I experienced outside of personal relationships, it's the 10-year span I served on the Spirit Rock Board and played a role in creating that place. And the other one is the 10 years I spent as a volunteer counselor with a group in Palo Alto called CARA, which provides peer counseling to grieving and dying people. And my business career, I look back on and say, well, that was good. Mostly because it provided me with the means so that I'm able to support more things. But that's not very high on my list. What stands out for me in my own life is the places where I have really been able to make a difference to human beings and to organizations that serve human beings. A couple of practical thoughts as to how one manifests this if one wants to. There was a program at Spirit Rock when they were in the middle of their last capital campaign, and I say last because I believe there's another one coming up soon.
Most recent.
Oh.
There's practically never a last in a
growing right, organization. Right, right. Well, that place is only about half built. So, but somebody came up with the notion of the Sangha of 1,000 Buddhas, which subsequently I learned some of the monks objected very strongly to our using that particular nomenclature, that you do not use the Buddha's name to raise money. Nonetheless, it was a very simple program, which was designed to encourage people to make a donation of $1,000 over 3 years, which turned out to be approximately a dollar a day, figuring that there were a lot of people who could do that. It's interesting, the dream was that we would get 1,000 people. And in fact, I think the number is about 1,400 or 1,600 now. So a dollar a day for 3 years, 1,400 people say, happens to be $1,400,000. It's amazing how a dollar a day with time and a lot of inclusion can produce that. One of the things was the different ways that family used it. Some of them made a daily ritual of the whole family of actually putting a dollar in a little bank. And it gave them a wonderful opportunity to introduce their children to this whole experience of supporting things other than just yourself. It's interesting that my daughter, who's in her late 30s and is a single mom having adopted a child 4.5 years ago, and she's basically non-denominational. She's definitely not a Buddhist. But on her own, she came up with the fact that Sam, her little boy, gets $1 a week allowance now, and he has 3 banks, and 2/4 go into a bank marked savings to help pay for his college education or whatever, but to teach him about training. 1/4 goes into a bank called Helping Others. And then 1/4 goes into his bank, and he can spend it however he wants to. And I'm not sure how much he understands these concepts totally, but he smiles the most when he puts 1/4 into Helping Others. I mean, it's really a joy to behold. So it's for each of us to find the form that lets us most express that movement of the heart, that compassion that really allows us to do in the world the things that we, in many or most cases, most want to do. And that's where we just need to find what works for us. I have some notes. Let me see if I forgot anything. No, pretty good. I guess what I'd really like to do now, that's a bit of a short Dharma talk, but I'd really like to invite people to share personal experience, ask questions, to bring our collective wisdom to the question of what is our experience of generosity and compassion? How do we manifest it? Where do we get stuck? I mean, these are all issues that I think most of us have confronted. So I'd like to just throw this open. I will try and remember for the tape recording to repeat the question. Somebody yell at me if I forget. But I'd really like to open up and hear what other people have to say and what their experience is. Yes?
Well, I have these urges, I think we all do, and what I struggle with are where and how and, you know, what's the best. And so, therefore, I don't do anything. And so I'm wondering if you, in the beginning, when you first started noticing these urges, had the same struggles and how you worked through that.
So the question is, about having the impulse, that generous heart that wants to, but then being unable to figure out what's the best form and how to do that. Is that fair? Let's see. I'm trying to remember a quote. There ain't no answer. There's never been an answer. There ain't ever going to be an answer.
That's why I formed my question in terms of your own personal experience.
My own personal...
At one point, struggle with the same questions. How did you work through?
God, if you'd heard one of my other Dharma talks, I spent a lot of time on that. When I first started doing this practice, and there was the Donna basket at the end of a retreat, and I basically started with the retreats, not a daily practice. I mean, my first experience was in saying, let's see, this is a 10-day retreat, $2. I have that kind of brain. This was a long time ago. I think these teachers are, you know, $100 a day, 10 days, $1,000, 2 teachers, $2,000. Counted how many people were in the room, 40, that's $50 a day. there was no caring or compassion in that whatsoever. I mean, that was just doing the calculations. What I do now, and by the way, I spent 5 years stuck in that place, and after every time I would go through this machinations, it's why I warn you about the critical judgments, because afterwards, my mind would say, oh my God, you're such a cheap person. You could have given twice as much and it wouldn't have even really impacted you at all. So the next time I'd give twice as much or four times as much, and then the mind would come up, oh, are you a jerk? You could have gotten away with half as much. And I mean, this went on at least 5 years that I struggled with that. But I hadn't gotten to, what I'd gotten to was giving away money, but not from a heart space, but because it was expected of me, and I did the best I could with where I was at the time. So what I suggest that people do, and this is from my experience as a financial person helping people budget, is that you look down and you look at your circumstances and you use discerning wisdom to say, well, I can afford to give away $100, $1,000, $10,000, whatever number you come up with, and then you prioritize. And again, because the needs are so enormous, the prioritizing is difficult. I mean, we're all pulled in so many directions. If you're involved with some of the major philanthropic organizations like the Peninsula Community Foundation, the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, San Francisco Community Foundation, Marin, all of those people, what they suggest is that you try and bullet a major part of your money, that you look at what's most important to you and where the impact will be, where you can have the most leverage with whatever you can do, and that you give a relatively large chunk of your money in that form. And then, you know, the American Cancer Society and all these other good causes, you just decide, okay, I can only do so much. This is the list. This is who I'm going to give it to. And again, don't beat yourself up afterwards by anything about you could have done more. Oh, I should have added X and left off A. I mean, that's a no-win game, I promise. Does that help? Other questions or sharing of experience?
What was the transformation from being this computation mind, if you will? What happened? The misery, the suffering, this
I don't know actually what finally happened. It was finally, maybe I had such a bad headache. I mean, I'm not sure. But you know, those of us who have sat on the cushion or chair for a fairly long time, it's never been clear to me when something new, when that shift to a new level takes place. It's a process. And about the only thing I know is I can look back and say, oh, wow, that change started 5 or 7 years ago. And I didn't even know the change was happening. So I don't have a definitive answer to your question. I just know that depending on what group of people I would be talking to, I would say that was just great karma that finally kicked in, or divine grace, or whatever language. I did my part in struggling with it, but the universe supported me, or the Dharma supported me, and something happened. The question being, I missed one. So this emerged.
The change just came out of your practice.
Question being, change came out of the practice. Answer is, I believe that that's actually what happened. It just emerged organically as part of the process. And that's, in my own particular case, where it manifested most strongly. It's why I like to talk about it. Somebody can say to me, well, why don't you really get into the first noble truth, suffering? Well, I'm still, not totally willing to go into that one. I can talk about it. I can sound erudite. I've read a lot of books. But have I actually totally immersed myself in it? Has that happened? Not yet. So this is the way it manifested for me. And we're all different, so I don't know what each of your processes will be like. Yeah.
I'd like to share something about
great.
Inspiring Donna, actually present for this group and see all the donations that were given to the building fund. And there were three that a daughter of one of our members who gave a $20 bill in honor of another member gave that was really satisfying.
Well, the tape picked that up. Great. Let me just say that when I was in the role of fundraising at Spirit Rock, the big gifts were wonderful. I mean, and we were very grateful. But there is something special when a single mom who's living in Marin, hasn't got a great job, is on the edge. When they give a check of $5, $10, $25, and you think about it, and it really means that they're choosing not to go to a movie or go out to dinner, there is something really very, very touching. And that gives you that taste, that flavor of it was the heart, it was that compassion and kindness and caring concern. That's the motivator. Thanks for sharing that. Yep.
I want to share a story about something that happened to me in the last month that's still going on related to Donna. And although I would like to give her counseling for life, if he needs that. And to me, and again, it's not a right or wrong, but the satisfaction of being able to find a way within what works for me to give that's beyond money.
Thank you. That's inspiring, and it brings up the fact that for me, when this process worked, however it worked, it's actually the greatest source of joy in my life. I mean, it's whether it's in the form of the money or writing a letter or whatever, that heart opening just totally to the situation is... the payoff is so good. We don't do it in order to get the payoff. I promise you it will not work. But it happens. It's just a...
If I can add one more thing.
Sure.
For that, which is, I'm hoping this man will take me up on his free career counseling, but the act of offering it and just thinking about it and wanting to give him support, that's the payoff. It's the wishing and wanting rather than having to receive the gratitude.
Yeah, it's not the outcome.
That's taken a long time to get to that. I often want to thank you when I do things.
All right.
That's not where it's at.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I wanted to add something else. Years ago, I was in the Los Angeles, and there's an old expression on where it comes from. But he said, let the giver be grateful.
Yeah. That's nice. What?
Thanks for the topic.
Sure.
I have trouble hearing, so I can't tell how loud I'm speaking, so if I trail off, just let me know. When I contemplated Donna, deepen our compassion, to me, is one of the most important gifts we can give to the world.
And to ourselves.
And to ourselves.
Yeah. In the particular instance that you mention, it sounds like there are two energies playing. One is what's already a lot of compassion. And so when you're experiencing that, just experience it. When the fear comes up, and I have fear come up sometimes that I give away so much money that maybe I'm going to run out of money before I run out of breath, and that's a problem. It's experience the fear. Just there's nothing. I mean, it's there. It's real. It's alive. And just trust that these will work together in some way.
Well, that's where the work is, isn't it?
That's where the work is.
Could have, like homeless, kind of group homes for mentally ill people. So anyway, those are the two things that come to me.
Yeah, thank you. Very special. One of the things that it brought up for me is being in Silicon Valley and all of that, although I'm not an electronics or entrepreneurial person, is I think related to generosity is also looking, and particularly for the subset that you mentioned, whose net worth went, is that their standard of living went to obscene levels. And they're up there, but their net worth has come back down here. And the easiest thing for most people to do is to give up their charitable living. That's much more difficult than for people to say, whoops, I'm going to ratchet down. I don't need to buy a new car every 2 years. I'm going to drive a car for 10 or 15 years or the other form. So I think there's a relationship between our personal consumption habits and what we're able to do in terms of manifesting the spirit of Donna. And so I invite each of you, and I didn't say us because I don't want to do it. I invite each of you to look at your spending habits and patterns and see, well, where am I actually blocking my own self? Where am I doing things that I don't need to be doing that are just self-gratification? Oh, my God, I have this one-year-old cell phone. The new cell phone also scratches my ear while I'm listening on it, you know, and I got to have the new cell phone. And so consumerism is, I think, definitely tied in with both charitable giving, but also with the development of the heart space. If we're very focused on satisfying what we think are our needs, but mostly are our wants, that's an internal closing kind of feeling instead of the opening. And I think the two issues really do go together, and I encourage all of you to really look at it.
Our Sangha is maybe 10 years earlier developed than Spirit Rock. I would guess deal with, but I think of it in some ways the darker side of Donna when people are judging it should only be Donna, it shouldn't be a service.
I actually have a lot of experience and the collective thoughts from many, many people as we struggled with these issues, and I have my own opinions. It's such a broad topic, then rather than try to answer it here, because there are so many focuses, I think the board knows that whatever knowledge and experience I have coming out of Spirit Rock is that I'm totally available to help with those issues. But, I mean, there are issues when you hire a staff person. The tradition in the nonprofit world is that people in the nonprofit world get paid a lot less than if they're in the profit part of the sector. As a trustee or a board member for an organization that is raising money to do nonprofit work, there is a tendency to want to hold your expenses down all the time. On the other hand, there is something called right livelihood. And so Spirit Rock struggled a lot around, we were able to hire good people at a certain price. I knew that I could find them jobs at 50% higher price because of their talents. And at that, originally Spirit Rock wasn't providing retirement benefits, a lot of things that were not associated with the nonprofit world. And the board has struggled very hard over a good many years to balance, well, what right do we have to do a retirement plan for employees when all of these other nonprofits are not? And this is not our money. This is the Sangha's. This is the community's money. So, you're going to struggle with it as long as you're an organization. And B, in any particulars that come up, I'm more than happy to share whatever I know. I'm sorry that's not a very complete answer, but it's the best I can do at the moment. I'm nervous. Go ahead. Thanks. It's the Buddha's first talk after his enlightenment was to some bhikkhus, some followers, and he talked about the Four Noble Truths. The first talk that he gave to lay people was on Dhamma. So, I mean, it is right up there. Not, again, because you give money, but because of cultivating the heart and mind in a way that then really allows the rest of the practice to flow. But you start everywhere you can, I think, to get there. But yeah, it really is obvious with the monks.
I wanted to share something actually that fits right in with what you just mentioned too. I sit often on monastic retreats with Ajahn Amaro, and I sat with Ajahn Amaro and Ajahn was like, you know, maybe I don't want to contribute so much. You know, and I'm wondering how to deal with that on a personal level. I mean, maybe that's enough.
Yeah. Keep struggling.
Keep struggling.
It's not going to go away. The choices are unlimited, and we have to bring it down to a finite number. Both, again, I'm not talking necessarily money at all. I'm talking about even our time and our energy. Do the best you can and appreciate yourself for doing that. And forget all the other head trips. Or don't forget them. Notice. Thinking, judging. And then come back and love yourself.
Well, there's another little piece to it.
Okay.
I really agree with what you're saying, and I appreciate that. The other little piece is that since I've been a volunteer for many years of my life, I'm now also working full-time, so that obviously limits my volunteer time. I've dealt with it in the past by always offering to help, you know, to go to an organization if I feel like, you know, that I believe in what they're doing, but maybe they need help or there's something that's not, or there's some way that I can do that. And what I'm finding is that I have all kind of this track of all these organizations that I've done this with over the past that I've, you know, like, there's a museum that I started this day at, and, you know, and now I just see things that, you know, and they're maybe not quite on track on what I would consider, and so I'm less willing to donate in that aspect. And I don't know, but then I feel that's where I guess my guilt trip comes in. I feel like either I have to offer my time and energy to go in and help with it, or... And I can't quite separate that out from donating, just writing a check. I've just never been just a check writer, I guess.
I see we're over time. But the other thing that I think goes with, particularly not on the check writing aspect of Donna, but in our involvement with community organizations and things like that, is that for a lot of us, we have to learn limit setting. I've gone through where all of a sudden I've signed up for 5 volunteer things at once because I was moved to do it, and I never thought it through. And now I'm in the place where I got to keep my commitments, and I'm weirded out because I don't know which meeting to run to first or, you know, where to go. So learning how to take care of yourself in the same context is very important, because you don't serve your organizations or your family or yourself if you burn yourself out by overcommitting. So, at any rate, I think we should have stopped a few minutes ago, according to the clock at any rate. I'm more than happy to hang around if people want to talk more for a little while. And thank you all for allowing me to be here.